Welcome to Langtime Chat, episode 51.
Woo!
So, we are going to do something for this Langtime Chat, which is, I think, very daring, very audacious. We are going to record a podcast episode that is primarily visual.
You know, you mentioned this is what you wanted to do, and I 100% was like, okay, cool, yeah, we can do that, and you're right. Like, that's really kind of such a great idea. I should not let you be in charge of podcast topics.
Well, I looked at our previous 50 episodes and I was like, huh, you know what we never talked about?
Yeah, the thing that is hard to talk about in a podcast, David.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, cool. Well, we're going to do our best.
Yeah. We're going to talk about glyph design. So not tackling the full... the full process of creating orthography, just glyph design. And so what we're going to try to do, we're going to revive the lost art of the simulcast. I want to say between, like, I'd say the 50s and the 1990s, lots of sporting events, you know, in the United States at least, you would listen to them over the radio, and you would also watch them on TV. And so sportscasters, you know, during this period, in order to save money so they didn't have two different sportscasters, would call the game live for people watching television, but they would also narrate it for mm-hmm. people who might be listening and not watching. For basketball, one of the greatest was Chick Hearn. Because, of course, you know, frankly, I never listened to him on the radio, but I watched him, and you never got the sense that he was over-explaining. It was just, you know, there you were, and you were a part of the action. And, you know, it made sense, you know, rather than you just watching on screen what was happening, it made sense when he would say, you know, Magic Johnson behind the key, he's dribbling hesitantly, he's crosses over his main defender, passes to the right wing, AC Green with a jump shot. Good! Anyway, I wasn't doing my Chick Hearn.
Is this your really lengthy introduction to saying you think you can sportscast glyph making?
I think that's what we're going to try to do.
Okay.
I think that's what we're going to try to do. So
I was like, wow, David's really going off topic to talk about basketball. Okay. So now I also just realized, because... even though as the podcast, it's just audio, eventually there'll be a video.
Sure.
And I was going to airdrop you files, but now I don't know if that means everyone will see contact information on screens.
Yeah. So I think what we're going to have to do is I'm just going to have to see them myself, and then we'll just share the files later.
For the video? Okay. Now we're just staring at each other. Anyway, so the YouTube video people are just never going to see the files then.
I think that ideally they should have been airdropped earlier and we should have prepped it. And, you know, you could have set it up on my computer and I would not have looked at them until, you know, things were ready.
Yeah. Wow. Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
I know. You know, the thing that I like best about Langtime Chat is our professionalism.
Indeed. And it's really a shame. But you know what? You got to be a patron if you want to see the images. There we go.
Yeah.
Because patrons will have access to the files in the post. And everyone else, you're just going to get David's reaction to seeing the images. Okay. Yep. I'm ready, David.
So here's what we're going to do. Jesse has drawn up some images because the way that we've come to do orthographies lately, now that we've been working together, is, depending on the project, we like to start from the proto stage, which is usually the pictographic stage. And so Jesse comes up with ideas for images that whatever culture we're creating for, they might use these images as tent poles for their orthography. Then I take a look at them, and then, you know, we imagine how the orthography would have evolved through the ages, how it would have started as a picture, and then, you know, what writing system it eventually began. And so I kind of orthography the image that she has created.
Beautiful word.
Yeah, thank you. And so she has drawn some images for me to consider, and I'm going to orthography them on the screen for you.
And actually, can you hand me Because I, when I open my notebook for you, I don't want to show. If you can just hand me a piece of paper, we have, or that, okay. I just don't want to show both images on the page at once. Okay, so David.
Yep.
And David's just now finding out what this glyph is going to originally come from.
Haven't seen it.
Has no idea what semantic concept I have chosen to be a referent. And here we go with image number one. So David, what are you seeing?
So I'm hoping I can just take part of this, but this is an early morning rooster. The rooster is crowing the rising of the sun. In the background, you can see the line of the horizon. To the right, the cresting of the rising sun. To the left, you have a darling little rooster who's crowing his little lungs out. He looks like maybe he's not the largest rooster, but he makes up for it with his mighty crow.
Indeed.
And he is standing on a thing.
It's meant to be a roof.
Ah, he's standing and it's just like, on but you know, a roof.
It's just part. So, okay. So, yeah, you're not meant to orthography the entire concept.
Okay.
It's just this is a starting image. I wanted to give you options, and I wanted David to talk about what he's looking for in terms of what might be more interesting, you know, in terms of shape. So I've given David many options. Option two.
Uh-huh. Oh, here we have two little hens. One is a standing hen, looking quite content. The other is a smaller hen who is pecking at the ground at some seed that has been distributed for the hen lovingly by some human. In the background is a hen house. There is some grass behind it. And there is a ramp that leads into the interior of the hen house.
Indeed. So now this already gives us three different options in terms of course, we're just making a glyph and it doesn't have to be contextualized. Mm. But we could theoretically have a language where it's like the word for rooster, the word for hen are two different things, like in English. Mm. And this could be like to peck, right? Like, you know, the pecking chicken could actually come from a verb meaning to peck. And so if we're doing logography versus, you know, alphabet or whatever, it's like it, I'm just giving a variety of things. But the shapes are what I'm, you know, of the chickens. So really we're looking at the shapes of the chickens to be like, which ones are potentially more pleasing. Now, those were some more detailed images, but I did also want to give David some more, like, because those would be like the calligraphers of the world doing the detailed images, but we also have some very simple images to look at.
That's another darling little hen, lovely bird.
And it's much simpler. There's not as much detail. There's no background. It's just the one chicken. And so it's just overall a much simpler outline to work with. Mm-hmm. And then finally,
We have just the chicken print, and also just the profile head of the chicken. This is what you might imagine if there were chicken children and they went to school and had a silhouette project. This would be the ones that they did. And you could see that one of these chicken children is a bit more of an artist than the other. But of course, Mama Hen will love each silhouette equally.
And so
this one has a lot of charm, doesn't it?
I was very happy with all of them. I was so excited to unveil the chicken drawings and tell you that you are creating a glyph for chicken.
Yes.
And so those are the options I'm presenting you with as starting images, in which vary a lot in completeness and detail, although the shape of the standing chicken, whether it's simplified or more complex, is really the same. But the rooster, because he's crowing, gives a different outline because you get the open beak and the upward facing, and even his little eye is closed because he's putting everything into it. And then, of course, the pecking one gives you very different shape.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk first about how you, why glyphs become glyphs and why they take on the shapes they do. because it's very similar to another phenomenon that you might be familiar with if you're a conlanger, the conlang relay. In fact, if you want a really wonderful example of a conlang relay recently, a group of LTS patrons released a conlang relay on Let's Have a Booba, the YouTube channel. And that was just a wonderful example. And it'll help to illustrate exactly what I'm about to talk about. In a conlang relay, you notice if you look at the texts as they go through, what happens is you never get a perfect translation. And that's partly because of the nature of the game and the time frame. This is not, if you were to get a text in somebody's conlang and you wanted to produce a professional, high quality translation, you wouldn't do it the way you do a conlang relay. Part of the fun is that these things are going to get messed up a little bit and that they probably are not going to get translated exactly. After all, if you were to do that, I mean, you wouldn't actually just give somebody just lexical items and the grammar. I mean, you'd give them everything that they could possibly need to do a high quality translation. So what happens then in the shortened time frame of a conlang relay is that certain things become more important than others. Certain details become more important than others. And what details those are, the previous relay participant can't say. They might, write up, a little thing, like one of the lines may say, like, and then he turned quickly to talk to his mother, right? The next person might mistranslate that, or maybe they don't have the words, or maybe they've gotten kind of the wrong sense of it. They might translate that as, and then he whipped his head around to talk to his mother. And then the next person might be like, and then he hurt himself or something because they misunderstood like whatever the whip around was. Maybe like he thought he hurt himself and then he hurt himself and he talked to his mother. And suddenly you're getting something where it's like it doesn't make a lot of sense anymore. But it's like the facet that got passed on in this translation was the quickness and violent nature of the motion. Suddenly that became a feature. The person who originally wrote that, they probably weren't even thinking about that, right? It was just like, I just want to indicate that, he turned around and talked to his mother, but we're going to throw in an adverb here, maybe. But somehow that part, it was like, oh no, this is important, so we've got to translate that. And then suddenly it gets passed through, and suddenly this thing, it was just a little detail that was thrown in, becomes like the only recognizable thing of the line, like 17 translations down the line. That same thing happens with glyphs. Because taking a chicken, for example, may I borrow one of these chicken drawings? All right. So I'm going to look at actually this standing chicken. So this is the first standing chicken, and it's a very delightful chicken. It's just standing still, it's not showing any emotion, it's not really doing anything, as opposed to the crowing chicken or the pecking chicken. It's just standing there. All right. And so you can imagine if somebody is drawing this glyph, right, and they're just drawing this standing chicken, well, it's not really doing anything. So how do you indicate that this is a standing chicken versus something else? That's when you go back to the drawing and start to look at the details. You're like, okay, well, lots of birds have beaks, so that's not going to distinguish it from another bird if there are other birds in the system. Lots of birds have feet. Lots of birds have wings. Hey, what about this funny thing on the top of the chicken's head? It's not very big in the drawing. But if that's the only thing that's going to distinguish it from another bird, maybe that's what you focus on. And maybe the way the tail feathers splay, maybe that's what you focus on. So maybe as this thing gets iterated, those two elements become more important, not necessarily bigger, but so important that you cannot leave them off or you haven't drawn the glyph. All right. And certainly, like, the person who drew it is like, that was just part of the chicken. It wasn't as if that was the most important part. All of it was the important part. Now, though, those two things are the important part, and they need to be replicated. Anyway, so.
And I also wanted to point out, you were talking about the Conlang relay and, yeah, and the ways things get passed. If you happen to have played Telestrations before, or if you've never heard of it, I encourage you to get it. It's an amazing party game. But it's like telephone, but with drawing. And so you draw something and pass it to the next person who has to guess what the drawing is. And then they pass their guess to the next person. Mm-hmm. And then that person draws the guess. And so, like, what you're seeing is a game of telephone, but with drawings, and it's going through, like, cognitively what you thought you were looking at when you saw the drawing. And I really think that that mimics the beginning stages of writing systems, where before they are standardized, where it's like, I think I've got my pictographs done really well, where you should understand this thing I'm trying to tell you in this, you know, painted or written form, and I hand it to you, and you suddenly go away with this 100% different interpretation of mm-hmm. it, and you tell it to somebody else who then writes it in a completely different way, and it becomes really changed. And with something like chicken, it's usually never as simple as just draw a chicken in the game of Telestrations. But if it were, and, you know, let's say I drew a chicken, David wrote his guess chicken and hands it to another person, and that person draws a bird, but it no longer looks like a chicken because they just draw, because not all chickens have the little head things. And yeah. So you could draw what you think in your head is like, hey, it's a chicken, and hand it to the next person, and they're just like, bird, or even flying, or like something different, like they're now looking at other things, you know, like it can end up really changing what you look at. And I think that that is kind of a really crazy thing to think about in terms of the start of a writing system, is that at some point people were not using the same forms.
That's true. Think about even like an emoji that looks exactly like a chicken. That emoji might mean a different thing in the context of naming animals. So, like, you got a bunch of different emojis for different animals. Or if you see that emoji on a menu, right?
Yeah.
Similar things, but very different. All right, let's get to the font, because I know that we have this visual element here. So you'll see that there's absolutely nothing in this font. All I did was I put a dot in there. And it's actually a very well-formed dot. So it's cheating a little bit.
David has a dot on the screen.
Yeah. But now we're going to take that and do some things to it. So I'm going to copy and paste my dot because we want a line. So we're going to delete. I don't know what these things are called. I wish I did. But
they're just called nodes.
Those weren't nodes. They were connection thingies that make the. There are these little things that make curves. So I'm just deleting those so that we have straight lines, because this. Dot started out with 4 points. I'm going to use those points to make a line. So yeah, but we have to delete all the little thingies that make it curve. Delete, delete, and delete, and delete. Oh, got a couple more.
Quite a few. Circle has a lot of curves, and now there's what's the weird little red bump? Heat map thing.
It's telling you that this thing isn't quite. It's not straight. There we go. Oh, there's evidently an extra node here. Oh my gosh, is there an extra node somewhere on this? Yeah, whatever.
Listen, the circle's good, and now you've got a block.
Yeah, now I've got a block. Almost. The precision really matters. So right now I've described a rectangle, points at 00, 0, 500, 261, 500, and 260, 0. If you followed all of those numbers, you'll realize this is not a perfect rectangle. If you look at it, it looks pretty good. But here's the thing, pretty good is not perfect. And when you have a program like this, why would you do anything other than perfect? So we're going to drop that and make it 260. And actually, we're going to
move it and just as a reminder, it's FontLab 8.
Sorry, David, I should have said that. Yeah, this is FontLab 8. most high-end font programs will work in a very similar fashion that includes glyphs and Fontographer. I believe that Fontographer is free. There's another node here. There we
My
go.
My goodness.
I know. I don't want it to be 250. I want it to be 200. There we go. So now we have a rectangle that's 200. And so now we have a point and a line. Good. By the way, my instinct was to go and save, but I haven't saved this as anything. But like at every single moment, just save, 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 save.
Because it can die at any moment.
Any moment. I mean, not this. This version is actually pretty stable. But anyway, all right.
Well, no, just computers.
Yeah.
Die at any moment.
So we got a point and a line here, and I want to keep these available for later use. But I do want to show you, let's go ahead and draw this chicken. I want to imagine, so now I'm going to take a pen or a brush thingy. I'm going to draw the standing chicken, imagining that this is somebody riding on stone who does not have all the time in the world. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at tomb inscriptions for Egyptian hieroglyphs, really just lovely artwork, a lot of it. There are some other Egyptian inscriptions that aren't as high quality, but the tomb inscriptions are just great. They're just fantastic. Not everybody has that kind of time. So let's see here. There's this... kind of line like that. I'm going to go with something like this and then probably a cross there, maybe a line there and foot there, eye, beak, and some sort of crown. All right.
Oh my goodness, I cannot wait
for
everyone to see the video version. We're going to need to do like screenshots to post or something. I like that little
I'm gonna
line.
I'm going to put a third line. This line is a stray line. I actually want to get rid of that. Can I do that?
I kind of like that one. Is it? Oh, you just want the three.
Yeah, because I don't want that to be seen as a part of it because it shouldn't be. That's the gentleman. I see that.
Okay, so David's drawing is definitely a standing chicken still.
There we go. Standing chicken. All right.
But it is very much simplified and it honestly just looks adorable. I could see this as modern art on some wall or something.
It's pretty cute, but I will want to say, like, this is obviously, this is just for reference and also just so that you can see. Nothing that looks like this should ever appear in any font that you share with another human being, ever. I will say that 90% of the stuff I see online looks like this. It's just, it's irredeemable. And, like, it's stunning. I would say that you can get by with something like this if all you have is MS Paint. However, Carl Buck only has MS Paint and his stuff is incredible. So no, you need to do better work than this. But that is a good reference. And what I want to show you with this image that I've done of the standing chicken is that I've focused on a few key elements. Number one, you'll see I lost the wing. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it was like, whatever, all birds have wings. We have the kind of generic bird shape. So it's like, it's kind of like got this horizontal section that tapers off towards the end, a front section. It's got a little crown. It's got the beak. It's got the two legs and it has the tri-tip tail there. So those are going to be the key elements. That's going to be our reference. And now we're going to see about doing this in different styles. So for example, let me think, if this chicken were actually a High Valyrian glyph, how would it show up? So first,
well, and that's actually interesting too, because High Valyrian glyphs can be much more detailed because it represents more than just a sound or a part of a sound. Versus if you were doing a glyph for an alphabet, yes. or something like it, you would want it to be even more reduced because you don't want eight strokes for a single sound. Like that's yep. a little bit crazy. Versus like a character that you would see in Chinese orthography where that's like yeah. quite detailed at times. But it can be because it represents a whole word.
So this is a good first step. We're going to create our High Valyrian glyph here. It'll be in red. And so what we're going to need is, let's see, so that's 200, right? Thickness 200?
Was it 200 or 250? I forget now.
No, this thing is thickness 200. All right, so this thing
is... This is the line.
It's going to get a lot bigger. So we're going to go and see, okay, what is important here? And how does this work with the aesthetics of High Valyrian? Because in High Valyrian, if you're going to do curves... There really should be a reason for that.
Mm-hmm. I don't think this merits a curve because that a V could represent the body of the chicken just as well, where it comes down and up.
Hmm.
You could use a V. I think you could.
That's even... actually a very interesting, derivation of it.
I also think that if you wanted to keep the legs in, you could effectively create what could be a double-stemmed Y kind of shape,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, like our Y that we think of has the V with a single line coming down from the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But what if you had that V with a double bottom and it doesn't come out of the middle? It's, you know, on either side of the middle.
Yeah, and I feel like the line would be preserved across. So what we're going to do is we're going to... Okay, so... That's at 1100. That needs to be at 1200. And so I don't remember what the angle is, but I think it was like something like 29 or 30. That looks a bit.
Are you talking about like in a lot of?
Yeah, it looks Valyrian a bit. That looks a bit steep. Actually, I'm gonna go with an angle of 25, and you can actually see the angle right there. All right, so we've got that. Copy, paste, flip, and now we're going to move it over. And these nodes, you see, they actually have things. This node is at 900. This one is at 560. So we're going to put it exactly on that point. 1, 2, 3, 4, 860, and now 960. And there it is. We remove the overlap, and there you go. Now you have the perfect V shape. I think that what we're going to do is we're going to have that cross section. And so if your top is at 1200, your bottom is at zero, your cross section is, I think that the cross sections in High Valyrian are actually 150. So let's see. Because you can see the width of this line here is about 180. And so you want something that's going to be comparable. So we're going to go with 150. And I want that to be, let's start at it. Yeah, let's go 600 to 750.
And 600 would be the midpoint, yeah?
600 would be the midpoint, yeah.
And so it'll be the midpoint and then a little bit higher.
Yeah. So we got, oops. And definitely look at where the nodes actually end up because you want them to be exactly where you want them to be. So nodes at 750 on the top, 600 on the bottom. We're going to drop a couple more there and then just drag it over. Now, again, you could just eyeball this, but why would you want to when it can be exact? Overlap removed.
And so now there's like an upside down A shape is going on, a capital A, but upside down is what has effectively been created right now.
Yep. And so now what we're going to do is we're going to take that line again. Oh, by the way, where's our side bearing? We're going to move that over. You can get the side bearings perfect, but it doesn't really matter right now. I don't think that these things should be, because this of course isn't exactly High Valyrian. It's a High Valyrian-esque. I'm gonna make this 180 in width. All right, so we've got a line that's 180 and we're gonna try to do this double line shape. There has to be enough room for it to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I think is going to have to happen is that this thing is going to drop down to the descender line. for High Valyrian, which I remember is negative 250. This thing is going to move up. It doesn't really matter where, just as long as when you hit the overlap, it gets in there. We're going to have to figure out.
So it's not looking like I was thinking in my head, because the V of the overall V shape that was created is not as wide. I had envisioned in my head something a bit wider.
Yeah, this is, and initially it was going to be that wide, but then I pulled it back because I had an idea. And now I know where I'm going to put this thing. I'm going to put this at 410. So I'm going to put it at the connection point where that cross line is. This is probably going to make the glyph a bit narrower, but, you know, we're going to roll with it and just see what happens. Interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
We have what now in your head, if you can think of an upside down A with two lines that come straight down from the crossbar of that upside down A, which, if you then look at it, looks like a capital M on the bottom.
Yeah, it's like an upside down A superimposed over a capital M. And now what I want to do, by the way, is I want to show, because High Valyrian, of course, has serifs, I want to show you how to create serifs. So we're going to zoom in on one of these things, and basically it is just all math. So we're going to start at negative 250 on the right side of the left straight. We're going to go up 100. Yeah, let's go up 100. So we're going to go up to 150 and put a node. And now we need another node. Let's go halfway, 200. I'm going to drag this out. Yeah, I think this isn't... Wait, no. The High Valyrian is shorter than that. So I'm actually going to take this down halfway. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Wait, what? One more. There we go. It was negative numbers, so it was confusing me. All right, so there we go. So it's pulled out. It's a pretty fat serif.
It is a wedge.
Let's take it back 50. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Nope. Nope, I like it. We're going to do it. Yes.
As a side note, while you're working on this, I just want people to know that while we were traveling this past month, and I think David posted, did you post a picture of the font that we saw on the bank? Or did you just mention the...
Oh, yeah, the Third Fifth National Bank.
But there was a font that was associated... with, I don't know if it's associated with the bank or with just downtown Cincinnati, like, because this whole area of downtown Cincinnati used the font.
I'm gonna make these go to curb because we're gonna curb them.
Perfect. But there was a font where the serifs on most letters, there were a few letters that were exceptions, but on most letters where it was only to the right.
Yes.
Like the serif didn't go to the left. It was only to the right.
Yeah, only the letter I, I think, had a serif that went both ways.
It was I and one other, because I remember pointing
T?
It out.
T.
Yeah, it may have been. Yeah.
And then the other ones, yeah, the serifs only went to the right. I want to point out what I'm doing here. So I clicked on the diagonal lines that are forming the serif, because right now it's a very Gothic serif, right? I clicked on the diagonal lines and I said go to curve. This produces these little leg guys that make the line curvy. Woo! And now what we're going to do is I want this thing to be flat. So I'm taking the nodes that it's produced, which are directly parallel. They're on that diagonal line. And I'm going to take it down from the hypotenuse to the... longy boy of the right triangle. So in other words, I'm going to take it down to negative 225. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. And I'm going to do the same thing over here, except that I think I can do a trick here. I'm going to select these nodes and say, make them smooth, which is going to, I think, turn them into little triangles that make them go straight down. And it did. Perfect. There we go. And now,
there was a lot that just happened there that I am not entirely sure. I feel like anyone who has worked with vector art programs or font making software will be like, yeah, I get it. And everyone else is going to be like, what just happened?
See?
And like, I watched it happen, and I'm still like, what just happened?
And now it's a little curvy font. So the great thing about these little triangle guys, I don't know what they are, is that you can just drag them any which way, and they only go straight. So they only drag the curve straight, which means that you don't have to be as careful when you're dragging the node. That's all. Now, what we want to do is we want to make a nice smooth curve as we go from the straight line to the curve of the serif. And right now it's not smooth. Like, you can just eyeball this and tell that it's too sharp going from the straight line to the curve. Slightly too sharp. So what that means is that these nodes need to come down. Right now the distance between the node and the little curve
handle.
I don't know what this darn thing is called. I should know this terminology. It's 41. So we're going to increase that to 50. Did I do it? Yes. It's covered up. That looks a little nicer. I would like the curve to come in a little more, so I'm going to look at the other ones right now. That's a distance of 33 for both of them. I'm going to make that 40. All right. And we're going to take a look again. I think it needs to come down a little bit more. I'm going to take it down. Yeah. Now, this does not look exactly like the High Valyrian Serif because, I don't know, there's something that I did different about it. But that's a pretty...
It's a nice serif.
It's a pretty good serif.
Now, is that something you can copy and paste over to another leg without having to redo that process, David?
You have absolutely anticipated my next move.
Oh,
also,
my God, that's wonderful.
Yeah, also, I see a problem. This is 150, this is 180. This should be 150. Oh, goodness gracious. What to do? After all, and it's all already pasted. And you can't fix it now, right? But you can. This is what you're going to do. So we're going to bring this in. One, two, three.
No.
Oop, and now it's 150. But look, suddenly this thing doesn't work anymore. Terrible.
So a lot of this thing's going on.
True. Okay, so I took the left straight, and it was at a width of 180. I brought it into 150. Mm-hmm. However, what happened is the top node of that straight has already been attached to the upside down A shape.
Oh, so it brought it in, and so now there's a little gap or a little cut.
Yeah, and so again, if you were to zoom out, it's like, looks fine, but it's not fine.
I can actually see it zoomed out.
See? And it's like, you could zoom out even more. Basically, this is the point where many conlangers usually stop and say, it looks fine, but it's not. It's not fine. It needs to be fixed. And so this is how you fix it.
David the perfectionist teaching you the only way to create orthographies is to be a perfectionist.
I mean, you could also just draw on a dirty napkin with your left hand if you want.
Well, David, when that's your only option.
True. Okay, so what you do is you take the top node because when you dragged it over, it changed the angle. The angle of this line, or the slope of this line, is now 27.8. You'll remember that the slope of the line was actually 25. So all you have to do is take this top node and move it directly down. And so, because that doesn't affect the line, all it's going to do is affect the angle. And so you drag it down until that angle is exactly at 25. And bingo, there you go. Now we know for the other one, if we want to shorten that up, that top node has to be at 642. That's what that one is at. It's at a vertical height of 642. So we're going to go ahead and just do that at the beginning. This is now at 642, and you can see the angle is totally off, but we're going to move this in. One, two, three. Perfect. 25 degrees. Okay. That should look a bit better. A little bit. I think that it's still, I think maybe you're right. We should have gone with a higher width, or we should have moved that up a little bit. Anyway, but that would be just a future iteration. Anyway, so what Jesse asked is, can you copy and paste? Absolutely, you can. Honestly, the easiest way that I found to do it, just delete the whole thing, got the serif, copy, undo, paste.
Oh my God, it's like cheating.
It sure is. Actually, before you do that, because it stayed smooth, it did the funky chicken.
Oh my goodness. It
Don't worry.
reversed the curve of the serif somehow.
It sure did.
Because it's not attached to anything, and so the little
Whoops.
curve handles, I think, have gone crazy.
All right, now the serif is in the
Oh my
right
God, but
spot.
I want to see what the serif looks like.
If you just do it like
Yeah,
that.
yeah, yeah.
Sure, let's take a look.
Oh my God, it's like a plunger. It looks exactly like a plunger.
Oh, well, I guess that you could say that. I was going to say it looked like a Corinthian column, but now I
Oh.
guess it just looks like a plunger. I guess I
No,
won't use
David's
that
actually
anymore.
right. Never mind. It's much better to think of it. It actually looks like the fancy what is it? The baseboard, but it goes around the ceiling, not, you
I
know,
always
the.
called it wainscoting. Apparently, others say wainscoting
Well, whatever you call it,
or
that
trim.
trim is a better word because that applies to anything. It looks like a fancy trim, you
Yeah.
know, like out kind of thing. But anyway, it is
Yeah.
curved the wrong direction for the serif.
Yeah. Anyway, so this it's not a problem. It's not a problem at all. All because you still have your original serif. So just copy everything. Copy all of the dimensions. So we know these bottom ones need to be out 40, and they are. So the bottom ones are fine. It's just the top ones. We need to first kind of just drag them down a little bit.
It was the handles that got messed up.
Yeah, it was the handles. Drag them down a little bit, make them smooth again. Now you see they're pointing the right direction. Now we just need to make them the same height, which is 60. They need to be 60. So this one is 54, and this one is 48. Now it's 60, and let's make sure that's right. It's at negative 210, negative 210. And there we go. Perfect. Now we have two more serifs. And anyway, so now, by the way, but yeah, once you've done it once, you can copy and paste everywhere. So this is now the serif for a straight line. Serifs on a curved line are trickier.
Curved or
I'm not curved.
slanted.
Slanted is
I'm sure curved lines are also very tricky.
what we'll call the correct term. So I want to take a look at something. If we bring this out, because this is out 100. If it goes all the way out there's barely going to be any space there. So I'm going to cheat. I'm going to just create two more nodes and bring the serif down. So there's negative 150, negative 250. So we're going to go to negative 100. And that's going to go to negative 100. And then basically, we need to know if this thing continued down that way, what would be 100 to the left and right of that? That's easy enough. Whoops. That's easy enough to figure out. You
David is
just
creating some weird magicry happen.
drag the node and make it so that it would be at 25 degrees. Sometimes you can't get it. So we have the choices between 25.2 and 24.7. 25.2 is closer, so we're going to call that our node, which is at 607x. And now for 760, we get 25.2 again. All right, so those are going to be our spots. And so then we just take that out 100 that way and 100 that way. We add two more nodes, and we're going to do the same
So,
thing.
what David has done is he added nodes below the bottom part of the upside down
Below the
A,
zero, yeah.
below it, and then effectively like then brought in an outside. So like it's like the bottom of an anvil. We are failing miserably at describing what's going on because you can't just say this thing.
I know, and I really apologize for doing that. Essentially,
you
though,
you would be fired as the radio announcer.
I would. We had the termination of the bottom of the upside down A, and that termination was at zero, and that is at a Y value of zero. However, since the character itself started off as too narrow, which I acknowledge, mm-hmm. definitely a mistake, but we're rolling with it. Since it started off as too narrow, I didn't want to bring the serif out at zero, because then the whole thing would be clustered up too much. Since we were already dropping things down negative 250 anyway, I thought, well, why not just put the serif below it? So now the serif is below the writing line, just for the higgity heck of it. And so what I did was I added two nodes to the flat termination that was at a Y value of zero, dropped those two nodes down to negative 100. I put those two nodes at the natural continuation of the slope of the upside down V shape, the upside down A, the V shape, right? Then where those nodes sat at the continuation of that slope, I moved them out 100 to the left and 100 to the right, because that's how wide the serif is. A serif is supposed to be 350 units, and this thing is 306 units. Well, that's not right.
Whoa.
Oh, but no, you know what? That was the continuation of the slope. You're right. Yeah. So it isn't necessarily 350 units, is it? It's just where the continuation of the slope was if it went out 100. Ooh, this raises an interesting question. Let's actually go ahead. You're right, because if it can be perfect, why not make it perfect?
That is totally what I said.
Let's make it 350. And so what is 306?
44.
So each one needs to go out 22. 1, 2, 1, 2. 1, 2, 1, 2. Now we can add. Now we're going to take the new diagonals that have been made for the serif, take them to curve, take the bottom ones, and they're going to go out 40. Remember, just like our straight serifs. And now we're going to do another trick. We're going to pull these in. We're going to make them flat or smooth again. Except rather than them pointing straight down, it's the continuation of the curve, of the slope.
You've entered your Bob Ross stage.
My what? Yeah.
Bob Ross.
So there it is, 25.4. You can see it was 25, now it's 25.4, so it's not perfect. But that's the kind of thing that happens with math when, in other words, with the lowest common denominator mm-hmm. type thing. Unless you can allow fractional values, sometimes it has to go one way or the other. And this whole thing only goes to 0.1.
So, okay, we put a lot of love into this High Valyrian style glyph.
Yeah.
I think it could be cool as we get close to the end, since we're getting close to the end.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying stop work on the glyph, but I think just using the drawing feature... it could be interesting to see how you, out of context, without knowing the other shapes in the, you know, any given orthography or whatever, you would potentially create like an alphabetic shape from the same drawing, or how you would potentially create a diacritic from the same drawing. I think that All right. could be a fun little just drawing challenge. But I do want to see, like, is that the end? Was that the glyph?
What did I just,
Was that...
I tried to save again. Sorry. No, this is not the glyph because it needs two more serifs. It needs serifs on the top.
Right. But, like, once you add the serifs, is that the glyph? Like,
yes.
You weren't going to add any more lines to indicate anything else. Like, this is it.
That is correct.
How long do you think it would take you to add those serifs?
About 7.5 minutes.
I mean, is this something you want to because it is on an angled line, so I know that it is going to be more complex.
It is.
But do you want it finished so that way you can share it?
Oh, God, I would love to finish it.
Go for it, because otherwise your brain is never going to move on. So David's going to finish these serifs and let us know what to do with an angled line ending in a serif High Valyrian style.
Well, this is what I want you to do. Pick up that basic chicken glyph. Not the chicken glyph, the chicken drawing.
Yeah.
And tell me what you would like.
What I would like?
Yeah.
For
our next glyph.
For our next... I'm confused. Do you want me to do what I was telling you we could do?
I want you to do it out loud.
Okay, so like, just draw...
No, just describe what type of thing that you might want to see. 1175.
This is your job.
Yeah, I know.
Your job is to...
No, just give me a style. You mentioned a diacritic?
Well, yeah, I was thinking like an alphabet.
Okay.
Like if you were to say this is now going to be a letter that represents, I'm trying to think of the most chickenish sound. I don't know.
Oh dear.
Maybe a K. They do a lot of clucking, you know. So maybe this will be the letter shape for a K. Oh, this is rough.
I think maybe this should do this.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Getting the serif lined up correctly above the angled line.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Difficult.
Same principle, though. Same principle, though. So just take these to curve. Make these go straight. And we're going to have it go out 40 again. Well, whatever. We know it's at 1175. Let me just see what that number is. 44. Okay. And then, wink. We're just going to do the same thing. Make these smooth. There they go. That one looks pretty good. This one needs to come up. Let's see what this is at. Okay, so...
So was the left one good or the right one? So
the left one was okay. Good. I'm actually going to take it up to 50.
So he's working on...
Now the right one.
The left-hand leg of this upside-down A. And what makes it tricky is not only... It's getting the serif centered over something that is diagonal is... hard yeah. In and of itself, but then the serif yeah. ends up being longer. It looks visually longer
yeah.
on the inside of the wider point. If you
it
will.
Sure does. Maybe I shouldn't have actually made that change that I did. Let's see. No, I should have.
Do it. Can you do it at a midway point between those two? Because
I can.
That looks really inside the A. That looks to my eye spot on.
Well, Jesse says it's good, so it's good. I might need to bring this down. No. Yeah, it's fine. Okay, so now we just do the same thing again. Basically delete everything but that. Perfect. Copy. Undo. Paste. Flip. Move it over. And now here's the tricky part. So in order to align it just correctly, what you want to do is put a node at, what is this? At 1100. On the line, and it's got to be exactly at 1100. Then you can just plop it on there. So like this, for example, you can drag this, the right side down from 1200 to 1100, And then you don't need to worry about the second one. Of course, it's in the right spot. And you can delete the extra node. Now, drag the serif over, put it right on top. That is at 1273. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Should line up perfectly. Remove overlap, and it does. There you go.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. And so then this is a rough draft, essentially. This is a rough draft of our chicken. And, I mean, I have to agree 100% with what Jesse said the first time. Either it's not wide enough or the crossbar needs to come up. Something is a little bit off about it. But you can see this is kind of a Valyrian-esque glyph that we made from our chicken. So what shall be our next glyph that we're going to do with just, you know, with just a few minutes to go?
Well, just with the drawing tool, like just to kind of show a sketch of what a letter shape may be that you would, of course, like flesh out into a nice character. But, you know, like just a sketch. What if this, instead of representing chicken as a whole, just were the sound k? But you started with a chicken drawing.
So there are a couple of ways to go about it. But like, honestly, the thing that grabs me the most, we're going to make a, a Sarkaje type thing. So just to kind of show you, hang on, I want to make sure that we do this right. You know what? I'm lazy. I'm just going to use the rotate tool. There we go. Okay. So what I want to do here, I'm going to start over here. And we're going to need a lot more nodes. What did I do? Yeah.
Adding nodes.
So we've taken the line and we're going to add some nodes. And basically just add two nodes at every point where I want a strong departure. Right. We're going to have to cut down on how many nodes are present. Anytime you add a node, you add the possibility of an imperfection being transmitted to the glyph. So you want to ideally have as few nodes as possible, unless you're doing something like we did with Angala, the modern brush script. Is that negative? What is this? 2000 negatives. Wow, this is a huge glyph. Yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter for right now. You know, with Angala, and you actually wanted it to be to look very kind of jagged. We just add that in there. Bring it down. All right, and we're getting closer to that shape I was seeing. Gonna add, oopsie-doops.
Momentarily that oval behind it, I was like, did you just lay an egg there?
Yeah. Okay. And so what I was thinking is that it's like something like this where it's got a small thing up there and then a big, big swoop.
So it's like a funky...
It's like a funky S.
S.
It's like a funky S. And then...
It reminds me of those snake toys that I used to play with as a kid where if you twist the block, it twists, but it's like one straight line and you can twist blocks back and forth and you get like a snake shape, but it's got stops along the way.
And that's all going to change now because we're taking all the nodes that were straight and we are turning them into curves.
Can you like highlight all and say smooth all, or do you have to
yes,
note
but
by
I
note?
I don't want to do that all at once. See, okay. What happens is if there is a straight, sometimes you have to move things to curve because like they don't get the picture. Then you have to make it smooth. Otherwise, it turns it into a triangle. And of course, you know what the triangles do now. And triangles
they
are great.
Serifs. They only move up and down.
Yes, exactly. Triangles are great for certain things, but not for everything. All right. See, now we're kind of creating this smaller S shape on top. But then we really want a massive, massive swoop. Like very thick, fat line.
Is that from the body of the chicken? Like what?
Yeah, here. Oh wait, that's a triangle. We need to get rid of that triangle. And that's how we do it. Good, good. We don't need that. Let's get that. Nope. Oh, goodness. And then, of course, you know, if you were creating a font like this, you'd already have, like, a lot of these curvy shapes that you could copy from. We don't have that. We're creating it brand new. Don't need that. Yeah, look at that. You still need to see my chicken. My goodness. No, you don't. All right, let's see what happens in the interest of saving time.
David is curving all of them.
Yeah,
at
yeah, yeah.
And or that smoothing all of them rather.
You know what? It worked out. It worked out. The only problem is that this one needs to be sharp. All right, there we go. Let's drag that out like this because we want this nice little sharp. You know. I don't think we need this one. Again, the fewer nodes, the better. We're going to drag this over. All right, we're starting to get this kind of an S shape that I was hoping for. Probably don't need that. Might not need that. Yep, don't need that. Don't need that. Good. I'm just deleting nodes with reckless abandon. And ideally, when these little anchors or whatever they are come off of the node, they should be going straight, like
up and down instead of angled.
Up and down or left and right. Sometimes you can't help it. And it's like, if you look at a node and think, do I really need that? No, you probably don't. You probably don't. Look at this. We're down to... Do I want to keep that? Do I want to keep that? No, I don't. Not for this. We are down to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 nodes. That's not bad. 8 nodes to make an S. Now, this has kind of like a funky shape, which is appropriate. That's kind of like what we want for this Sarkaje-like font. Then the hard part is balancing it just right. Like this, I had the left side of the S was unbalanced and I didn't like that. So I had to fix it. If you drag these things out too much, then there's going to be a section that's too flat, which can't be good. Or, you know, when I say can't be good, it's not like, oh, that can't be good. It's more like, oh, it might not be what you want. Yeah, this is what we want. Because we want this nice, thick, thick swoop. Oh, gorgeous.
So one thing that has happened is, obviously this is a totally different style than the High Valyrian glyph, which is much more angular.
And the rules are different, but there are still rules. Anyway, go ahead.
There are, but one thing that has happened is that the High Valyrian glyph was, on the simple side of those kinds of glyphs where it would be 4 strokes to make. This one is 1. Like it is 1 stroke and
yep.
That is entirely appropriate. Again, considering, he's going to add something. So it
until.
May be 2. But considering what you need to do with a glyph in terms of how it's used regularly for the language is really important because, again, those super complex glyphs, which I see this in a lot of, especially beginner Conlinger orthographies where it's like a super complex glyph shape, but it's meant to represent one sound. And really, if it's a writing system that gets used a lot, that's just not going to stay because it's going to get simplified as needed.
Yeah, it's not an accident that the Chinese orthography is used with the type of language that it's used for. Not because like, oh, you know, like if there's not because if it's anything about the language, but it's that it allows that type of a writing system to be carried forward. 1811. Yeah. All right, here we go. Bah, bah,
bah. Oh my God, he's adding a little, a little flourish.
Yeah. Now, this isn't necessarily the style I want because I have a wild idea. I'm going to try it. I'm creating, this is the
little tail feather.
The tail feather of the chicken. I'm going to take these anchor nodes and put them directly up. And then I'm going to take these out and kind of, I don't know, I'm just going to kind of eyeball this, the first one. But for the second one, I'll just make sure that it's at the same point. So it's at an angle of 71.7 with a length of 242. All right. So 71.7.
And also, one thing to also remember is if you're creating a font, the font face style may not be the writing style. So this is a very fancy tail feather. But you could imagine that in other font faces or in handwriting, this little detail would get simplified even more. Yeah. But in this particular style, it can be fancy.
This is essentially it's almost like a little bitty four-pointed star that represents the tail. And you can imagine that this, if this diacritic makes it to this stage, it's probably enjoys some regular use in this writing system. And it will probably be written like either just like a hot check or a, you know how sometimes with an ampersand you write it going cross, mm-hmm. down, up, something like that. Anyway. And so there you go. And that's a totally radically different style from the original one. But you can see how it's like, even though you weren't, you know, doing the exact same, like, you know, sharp lines and angles, you still have to deal with all that stuff. You still have to manage it because otherwise the curves will end up looking wrong, you know, and it won't just fit just right. Anyway, so there you go.
That has been our podcast demonstration of glyph creation. Hope you enjoyed it.
Oh, gosh, and I did it again.
David keeps hitting save.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed it or made it through the end.
By the way, you'll also notice that the glyphs are radically different sizes. It's like, whatever, I didn't care.
Something
about
you would have to fix in moving forward with an actual system. But yeah, so that is our podcast for this month. And we'll see you next time.
Were we gonna tell them to stay any particular way?
Just grammar.
Okay.
Stay grammar.
Bye, everybody.